Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 3rd of February, Anno Domini 2018, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things, shoes, not the loose, kick off shoes, don't get the loose, here comes the news. Now, this is a dense news week, and I can only pick a half a dozen things. So we'll start with something that's near and dear to all our hearts. An eon or two ago, Eastman Kodak was a bleeding-edge technology company. It hired the smartest engineers and put them to work racking up patents, pioneering new chemical processes, and building a globe-spanning camera and film business that at its peak employed 145,000 people. But the digital photo age passed Kodak by. And today, Kodak exists mostly in the past tense. Many of the patents have been sold, buildings have been rented out or demolished, and the company's continued to shrink since it's filed for bankruptcy in 2012. Now Kodak is trying an unlikely sort of comeback, one built by betting on cryptocurrency. It's a bold gamble that has excited some investors, perplexed others, and raised questions about how closely Kodak vetted its cryptocurrency business partners, who now include a paparazzi photo agency, a penny stock promoter, and a company offering what has been called a magic money-making machine. Last month, Kodak lent its name to a digital currency called Kodak Coin, which is all one word but with a capital C in the middle, which is billed as a photocentric cryptocurrency to empower photographers and agencies to take greater control in image rights management. I'm not sure they had enough buzzwords in that phrase. The basic idea behind Kodak Coin is to use the blockchain to help photographers manage their collections by creating permanent, immutable records of ownership. The company also struck a licensing deal for a Bitcoin mining computer called the Kodak Cash Miner, with a K, of course, which allows users to generate their own cryptocurrency. I would love to test one of those. As investors seek to capitalize on the popularity of currencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, and Litecoin and Dogecoin and a bunch of many others, a number of struggling companies have reversed their fortunes, at least temporarily, simply by adding blockchain to their names or announcing a new cryptocurrency venture that's unrelated to the previous line of work. Kodak is the most prominent online company to enter the cryptocurrency game so far, and maybe the most controversial. Almost immediately, critics pounced on the company's plans, characterizing them as a desperate money grab. In an interview, Jeff Clark, Kodak's chief executive, said that the company's blockchain ambitions were genuine. He began looking into blockchain technology last summer, he said, and realized that it could solve a perennial problem for photographers, providing ownership of their images, tracking down copyright violators, and getting paid. And that's a good thing. That's all good. In theory, photographers will be able to upload their images to a platform called Kodak One, again, all one word with a capital O in the middle, create a blockchain-based license for each image, and use web-crawling software to scour the internet looking for copyright violations. Instead of using dollars, photographers can have clients pay them in Kodak coins. But there are a few details. There are a few details why a similar system could not be built without the blockchain. There is also a more obvious question. Why would photographers want to be paid in digital tokens rather than cash? Only time will tell if this is a genius move or just another also-ran. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Kodak coins. And your choices are: can't wait to start mining some, I'm a little leery, I'm a little confused, this will not end well. And who the what now? So far, we've got 31 people who voted. Who the what now is about 65% of them, followed by the cynics. 9 of you decided this will not end well. 2 of you admit to being a little confused. Nobody can start, can't wait to start mining some, and nobody's a little leery. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this because, well, let's face it, you are. So if you scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff, you will see the forums. Excuse me. The second forum down is poll discussion, and currently, at least, the number one, the top topic is 3 February 18, Kodak coins, Kodak One, and the Kodak Cash Miner. Feel free to add stuff in there, please. For Pete's sake, try to be polite about it. I think this could be a decent idea. You don't know yet. You just don't know. And then, of course, you can possibly join us online and give us a call. Right now, we're having a... oh, no, it's working. Okay. It's not working. Ah, okay. We're having an issue. But you can, at some point today, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
I think Ray or Al might have accidentally gotten the headphone adapter when they unplugged their headphones.
Ah, I see. That's what the problem was. But yeah, so as it turns out, we have Kodak diving into the cryptocurrency world.
Yeah, that might be just so photographers get paid at all, because there's a huge problem in the photography world about people using photos without permission.
Right.
And so now when you digitally watermark them, And you can prove that this is your photo, it might make it easier for them to buy them.
Right. Now cryptocurrency itself was originally considered a bad idea, a bad investment. And then it went up to $19,000 a coin. And then it dropped about another $10,000 quite immediately. But never before has cryptocurrency had a backer like Kodak.
Yeah.
Right?
It's always been a speculative thing that... it's a fiat currency. It's only worth what people agree that it's worth.
Right. And this is, as near as I can tell, please feel free to call in and correct me if I'm wrong, this is also, I think, the first time that there's been an actual point to cryptocurrency, as opposed to, well, you could use it to, like, buy stuff and stuff.
Yep.
You know? But in this particular case, there's an actual reason for it. So I'm optimistic. I think that this could go somewhere. I mean, yes, cryptocurrency is a buzzword. Blockchain is a buzzword. Blah 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 blah. But in this particular instance, there's a point to it all and a worthwhile point. Photographers have been, particularly since the advent of the internet and the ease with which one can steal someone's intellectual property, photographers have been desperate to find a way to keep their intellectual property their intellectual property. And so if this Bitcoin thing can actually work well, that would be kind of ideal, and we're hoping that's what we'll see.
There were a couple of episodes on Security Now. There was one back in 2011, February 2011. Hey, it's almost almost an anniversary, February 2011, where they talked about the initial protocol and the math and how elegant it was and how it would scale up, that the more that were produced, the harder it got to produce another one. They talked about a Bitcoin faucet, where you can have your computer plug in and generate Bitcoins, or there's a faucet where it just drips and it will give you a fraction of a Bitcoin.
Right.
And back then, when Bitcoins were a couple of cents, people were getting, a hundredth of a cent or, a thousandth of a cent, no big deal. Over Christmas, they played the episode again, because Bitcoin is now back in the news, over $20,000 of Bitcoin there for a little bit. And someone wrote in and said, my Bitcoin faucet that I turned on while we were talking about that episode, 10 years ago, I just cashed it in for $800. Thanks.
Yeah.
And Steve Gibson, who does the Security Now show, he put together, he had an i7 at the time that he wasn't doing anything with, and so he just installed the Bitcoin software to figure out how it worked and to talk about it and research this. And he got 50 Bitcoins overnight.
Nice.
Which is what you used to get back then.
Right.
Now, you know, you might get a hundredth of a Bitcoin every year.
Yes, yes.
And so they keep joking about his 50 Bitcoins are worth, you know, god-awful amounts of money now.
That's right.
But he rightly says if I cash them in, then they have to pay a capital gains tax.
That's true.
That's true.
That's true. He does.
So, and so the joke now is, in fact, there was a Big Bang episode about it where everyone that got into the Bitcoin craze in the early days, if you can find your wallet, what computer is it on? You know, where did I?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. How did it go through? Did I, you know, move it to another machine? Can I remember the password I created for that wallet?
Right.
And then the current blockchain is like 200 gigs.
Right.
So if you install Bitcoin now, it downloads the entire blockchain. So the blockchain is how it guarantees unique transactions. You know, it might take you a week to download the blockchain.
That's exactly
200
right.
gigs.
and the idea behind the not cryptocurrency, but blockchains in general is a very solid one and a very clever idea. And a very useful idea. So I get that. I absolutely get that. And because it's a new cryptocurrency, maybe we're back to the days where you could get a semi-decent amount of Bitcoins out of it.
Right.
Quarter coins.
But then there's no guarantee they're going to skyrocket in value.
No, and absolutely not. And that's not really the point, as mm-hmm. far as I can tell here. The point is to make it indisputable that I own that photo,
yeah,
and you owe me money.
Yep.
Now, as with every other indisputable...
there'll be disputes.
In fact, there will be disputes. And, of course, it's like having a patent. It doesn't guarantee that nobody will steal your stuff. It just guarantees you can sue them if they do, and you have at least a possibility of winning.
Yep.
But it's a start, and certainly in general, it's a feature that so many photographers have had to deal with. Suddenly finding your picture on another site, or think of the people who took a picture and suddenly it's being used for a meme.
Yep.
And there's a million and a billion copies of it out there.
And technically you can't do that because you didn't take the picture. You don't own it.
That's right. You don't own the picture. Yeah. Now, there are people who put out their pictures as freebies. And God bless each and every one of you who does that.
And that's a big question now in the law, that if you tweet a photo to the public internet, does that now become public for anyone to copy?
Right.
And the legal answer is no, it does not.
Right.
But that's how so many, you know, the meme pictures get going. I remember one a couple of years ago, there was a rocket launch video taken from an airplane, and it was really cool. I think it might even have been a shuttle, went through the cloud layer.
Yep.
And so the clouds got all orange and red, and then the rocket burst through it and kept climbing up from the airplane that was already at 20,000 feet.
Right.
And I read some interviews with the guy. Or maybe a woman, but the person that took the video, and they were saying that they've seen their stuff all over the internet in major newspapers, and only one or two ever called to ask for permission.
Yep.
And they weren't charging anything for it, but you still have to ask for permission.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And people don't remember that or think about that. And so, you know, I can go on Facebook right now and find a bazillion pictures and maybe grab one and use it. And most people won't care. They'll go, wow, you used my picture. That's great. But if the way you make your living is by selling your photography, you might just want to actually be paid when I use your photography.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 19 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And, here's the other big deal news story.
Did you fix it? It just takes.
It's my fault, actually. It's my fault. Completely my fault.
Wait. We need to hear that on the air.
Yeah. It's my fault. I broke it. My bad.
What'd you do?
Rob Linton, ladies and gentlemen.
While you're down there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You're horrible.
Plug that in, too.
I'm working on it.
Yep.
That's as bad as the time when we first started here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm new at the board.
Yeah.
And doesn't he dial in and start taking over?
Yeah. Yes, I remember
and
that.
And I'm wondering, I got this panic look on my face. It's like, what the heck's going on? I didn't touch anything. And I step back. And it's, yeah, I see these mouses and screens changing and everything else. I'd never seen that before.
Keep you honest.
Yeah.
So we have Rob Linton in the studio. And we had a small issue with the phones, and it is in fact something that Rob is taking credit for, or blame, I guess, is the better word. Blame for breaking it, and credit for fixing it, which I guess is okay. But we'll be able to take calls in just a couple of moments, and in the meantime, we're vamping till ready.
We have our YouTube live stream going as well, and a couple of people have been posting questions in there. Someone said they texted a question in. If we find what screen the texts have moved to, with things have been rearranging in the studio too, so we'll get to that in a minute, Jeffrey. As we're trying to get everything back and combobulated after it was discombobulated.
Right, it was discombobulated. Thank you.
Uncombobulated, is that a thing?
Yeah. It is now.
Well, if it's discombobulated you, when you fix it, now it's combobulated, right?
No, I don't get a chance to see you fellas enough.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
It's bleak for us, too.
Saturdays, I mean, you know, I try to be, you know, home.
You're sleeping in.
Netflix, scratching a cat, you know, things like that. But instead, I'm here with you fellas.
Is that what they call it? You young kids call it nowadays?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I'm just listening, and as we speak, is
all
I want to
take
doing.
A phone call so you can actually get it.
Yeah, tech support needs tech support. They're saying in the chat.
All right, here we go. We're going to the phones. Our first caller may, in fact, be Bob from Rush, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hold on, just a moment.
Internet speed.
Hold on, just a moment, Bob. Rob, thank you so much for coming in and fixing everything. Everybody give Rob a round of applause. Okay, it's enough for Rob. Go ahead, Bob. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. I got a letter from Spectrum during the week. Said they just increased my speed to 100 megabits per second.
Sure.
For free. So, of course, I had to check them out. I've got three computers. I fired up Ookla.
Yeah.
And one of my computers, to my amazement, I'm getting 118.
Yeah.
On the download. And 11 and fraction on the upload.
Yep.
I've got three computers, so I went to my second one. They're all like within 3 feet of each other. Went to my second one. I'm only getting 60 and a fraction. Okay, on the upload, and 11.65 on the upload, 60.66 on the download.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, that's not too bad. It's about what I've been getting before because my original service was 60. But then I go to my third computer, and I'm on the download, I'm only getting 9.46.
Yeah.
And upload is 8.76. Now, why is the discrepancy across the three computers? I don't understand.
Is the third computer the really slow one? Is that on Wi-Fi?
Pardon? Yeah, they're all on Wi-Fi.
They're all on Wi-Fi.
They're all on Wi-Fi. They're not cabled.
Okay.
Which Wi-Fi? Wireless.
Yeah, which Wi-Fi? Is it ABG or N or AC?
Right.
Is that computer the older one by any chance?
The older one is Well, no, it's a, well, second oldest.
Yeah.
Here's, okay, but I checked the cards. The slow one has got a Qualcomm Atheros network card on it. And I'm not sure what that means, but it was supposedly rated at 150.
Well, there's a bunch of things that can cause this, a bunch of things. One is the quality of the device itself. One is
speed, memory.
What
of the machine?
Band you're on. As Steve said, there's A band, B band, C band, N band.
Band, yeah.
Okay.
So 150 is N.
Right.
So 1300 is AC. So it's got a share. So it depends if you have an AC router or not, and what it's sharing with your other devices.
The one is an AC.
Right. So here's
I looked up that board, and
But now you have to also.
It's fast. Though.
Okay, but Bob, you also have to look at the router. What does it do? Not only what can it do, but what is it actually doing?
Okay.
Right. So if it's only doing B. If it's doing AC and you've got a laptop that only does A, you're not going to get AC speeds.
Okay.
And if you have, in terms of a driver, if you've got an older driver in that machine, you may not get that kind of speed.
Okay.
It also depends on what's in between you and the router.
Okay. Because, well, like I said, three computers are like about 3 feet away from each other.
Right, but it's not how close they are. It's what's between them and
between
the router.
Them.
So, for example, in my house, I have the router sitting on a table, and one computer gets my complete fastest possible speed. The other one gets it much slower. Why? Because between that computer and the modem, which are only about 6 feet apart, there's a metal shelf.
Okay.
Which is clearly cutting down on the signal. So I've now wired that one, so I don't have that problem anymore. Now it's getting full speed too. But but you see, the point I'm making is that if there's something between them, and in fact, if one of the other computers is between them, that can cause a problem, not only in terms of creating a blockage, but also in terms of radio interference, which means that it not only has to, it's not only got a blockage, but it's also getting bad packets, so it's got to resend them and resend them and resend them. It's resending them at 100 megabits, but because it's resending all the time, it's effectively 9 megabits.
And the other thing you may need to do is reboot your Time Warner cable modem and the computer so that they know about the new service
speed.
Speeds.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't do that. Okay, I can try that.
Yeah. But
I'm happy. I mean, my laptop, I mean, it's flying. Yeah. So I'm happy.
And we always get a kick out of.
I was just curious why my two desktops were slower.
Yeah. Yep. And if you were to wire them in, they would be faster.
Yeah, I can't do that because my router is in a different room. It's where the television is set up.
You just need a really long wire.
As I'm looking over there, I see there's a big refrigerator.
There you go.
Okay, right in front of the router.
There you go. What I ended up doing, of course, was I actually took the router and raised it up.
Yeah, okay.
So that it was above that shelf, because it was just a little shelf that held, you know, my Time Warner cable box and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I just raised it up over that, and now everything is fine. Everybody gets a great signal. Everybody's happy.
And the kitchen is full of metal, which blocks the radio signal.
Yeah.
Your microwave oven is.
I mean, these computers are close together, but they're positioned in different
sections
of the room.
Right. And one of the problems I have in my house is my house was built in the late 1800s. And so the one room that my wife would really like to have the computer in gets no signal because walls is curved. And, of course, they do that with chicken wire inside the wall. And that's essentially creating a Faraday cage. No signal gets through
there. Right, right.
So it's way more than just how fast is my modem.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're talking about wireless, it's way more complex.
Well, at least Time Warner is delivering what they promised to at least one of my computers.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the rest of it's on you, really.
Everywhere, but just positioned incorrectly.
Right, right, right. Yeah. So you have
okay,
to think
I
about...
Okay, I understand that. Thank you very much.
All right, there yep. you go.
Okay.
And I always get a kick out of the, you know, the one company offers 100 and you're getting 120.
Right.
And the other company offers 8 and you get 4.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. But yeah, the folks at Spectrum have done a very nice thing in upping everybody's speed, and I hope they up yours.
And one of the things that we see, which is extra confusing, is that if you're still using Time Warner internet, you're only getting 20. If you switch to Spectrum internet, you'll get 100.
Right.
Even though it's the same company now, they didn't automatically switch your service because it's actually Charter is the new company that bought Time Warner.
Right.
So take a look at your bill. See if you're paying for Time Warner internet or if it says Turbo or Max or something like that. That's the Time Warner service. And you can switch to Spectrum service at a higher price. I'm sorry, higher speed. Often a lower price. I switched from Spectrum from Time Warner to Spectrum and dropped my bill $50 a month.
Not bad.
Which was nice. The other thing that we're starting to see is the
sure
lost it. Yeah, I lost it. We're starting to see it, but I can't remember it. The scrambling of the lower channels.
Oh yes, yes, yes.
So if you have
to have a box now,
right? If you have a television that does not have a cable box. Just a coax wire that goes into the TV, that may stop working. In fact, it will stop working eventually. So the channels below 100, you're going to now rent a box for. And we've seen different people get different prices of free for a year. We've had a couple of customers say. Other customers are getting $6 a month. Some customers are getting $10 a month. For every TV that doesn't have a box now, you have to get a box.
Right.
And one of our customers said he has 7 TVs all around the house. That he's now going to have to buy a box. Well, that could be an extra $100 a month,
right,
for those TVs. So we're going back to the antenna.
When you say getting $5 or getting $10, you merely mean spending $5,
right?
Yeah. Spending $10.
Yeah, you're spending.
Is, though,
so in those cases, a second. Yep. In those cases, you might be better off getting an antenna.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, $25, you get a decent antenna. We've got a couple of them at the store. 60-mile range, you get all kinds of local over the air state high def stations for free. Especially on that bedroom TV that you watch the morning news on, or the spare TV, you don't need to spend that $10 a month. Getting those TVs. And we're going to have at Apple Cider, I'll switch my hat again, the Apple Cider meeting in 2 weeks on February 14th, we're going to have Phil from Stop the Cap talking about all of these new things that are happening as well.
One thing, because as you know, I cut the cord a couple years ago now. The one thing, though, you have to be patient with in those antennas, because I've got them on all my TVs, is you have to play around with it, folks. You just can't, as simple as they show it, slap it up on a wall. You've got to position it and play around with it at a particular wall or, say, a window or whatever to get the right position. And once you get it set up, though, like all three of my TVs now are set up with the antenna in the right position, you can dial in and I get them all. You know, I get 8, 10, 13, Fox. I even get in between channels. Like you said, it gets 60 miles, and I pull in a lot of channels, and that's the way I watch all my local channels now, is with that, and yep. Along with CW.
You'll be interested to know that Google has a new thing called YouTube TV.
Adding to the streaming television from like Sling and Amazon and other services.
Right, it's
now.
Streaming television, mm-hmm. It's local channels, it's unlimited DVR storage. You can save as many things as you can save. You can save the entire 24 hours of the day on every channel if you want to. And it lives for 9 months.
Is it available in Rochester yet?
I haven't looked yet. I just found out about it.
What was it called?
YouTube TV.
Oh, okay.
Now, that's different from YouTube Red, which is you get YouTube Red original programming. But you get 8, 10, 13, blah, 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 sci-fi and Disney, the Disney channels, various ESPNs.
Well, I get a lot of that with Sling right now.
So this is a competitor to Sling.
This is a competitor. And you can add Showtime and you can add Fox Soccer.
Well, that's what I was wondering. It's funny you mentioned that because Sling just came up with this thing now, pay $5 a month to do unlimited DVR.
Right.
Of programs in that. I'm just wondering if they're going to add the local channels like that.
Right.
I gotta look into this.
It's kind of nice. The problem is they don't do the History Channel. So I would not be able to get Forged in Fire. So, no, I will not be doing this.
Sling gets it.
Yep.
They do support Rochester now.
There you go.
But yeah,
so it's certainly something to look into if you don't watch Forged in Fire.
where with the Sling package, and I pay $29.99 for that. It's got the
right
History Channel, Discovery. All the channels, 8, 10, and 13 are the ones that I don't get.
Right,
I have to use the antenna for.
Right.
Now back to antenna for a second. There's a website called Antenna Web that I just posted a link to. You put in your address and it tells you what direction to point your antenna.
Nice.
So for you younger listeners, you may not remember antennas. Ask your parents about antennas. And you had to go up on the roof and turn it.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bob from Irondequoit on the line. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling regarding I downloaded LibreOffice, the new edition, which is 6.00, and I have Linux Sylvia on there, and on the database program, it will not let you do anything. It opens up, and when you go to click on the table tab or button, it automatically closes the program.
Okay, a couple of things. First is, I think, so you're using Linux Mint then, and the Sylvia version of Linux Mint, yes?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. I don't know that Mint automatically loads Java. I can't remember because it's been so long since I didn't have Java on my machine. I think that in order to do some of the stuff that the database requires Java.
That is correct.
You can go to javatester.org to see what version of Java you have installed.
I downloaded the newest version I could find, which was, 8.161 was the newest, or one that I know works. Let's put it that way.
Right.
It wouldn't need Java 6, would it? I've seen some older programs still want Java 6.
That is a possibility. The only thing I will say, is I did have the previous version of LibreOffice, and I had the same Java installed, and it worked without a problem.
And is this the last 5.4.4 of LibreOffice, or is it the new 6.00?
Actually, it's new one, 6.00. It's not doing it with. And it won't do it with the other one either. 5.44. It won't do it with that one either.
So when you run anything else, the writer or calc or impress, those all work.
Those all work.
But whenever you try to run base, it dies when you start it up, or what actually happens?
Okay, when you start it up, it'll show you, it'll say table queries, forms, and reports. And when you go to try to, go to any form, or you click to go on to a table, it automatically just closes the program. It just wipes right off the screen.
Okay. Before it starts, though, you have to tell it what database to go to.
That is correct, yes.
And you've got a local database, or you're going to like a MySQL or Postgres online? Or
just a local one on my computer is what I'm doing.
And that works fine? That you know that have you? Let me back up. Have you tried starting a new database? It could be a corrupted database.
Did that too. Tried that. No, does not work either.
In the LibreOffice preferences under advanced, there's a checkbox to say use Java, and that will tell you what Java you have installed as well.
Yes, and that's what it tells me. It tells me it has Java 8.1.6.1.
These are all the wrong answers.
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, are you using 32-bit or 64-bit?
32, actually.
There you go. That's actually a known issue. Do you get any sort of error message at all?
The one error message I did get was a driver, SCBD, I think, driver is what it was called. And said you need to do and install that, and I did that, and it still didn't work.
I hate to tell you this. I don't know that there is a newer report than this one, but back in June of 2017, basically the answer is, yep, base doesn't work on a 32-bit Linux machine. The theory is the new kernel release, which you're on Sylvia, right?
That is correct, yes.
Is theoretically supposed to fix it. It's actually a security issue that affected Java, which, of course, is required for base. And, of course, neither Ubuntu or LibreOffice or OpenJDK can fix this kernel issue because it's an actual Java kernel issue. Now there is a workaround which theoretically works on both 1604 and 1704 versions of Linux. I don't know which Sylvia is.
Sylvia is actually the newest one. It's 18.3.
Okay, it's generally 4.10, but yeah, okay. What you do is you need to add a kernel parameter.
That sounds scary.
It is.
It's like editing the Windows registry.
It is.
Probably worse.
But there is a kernel registry you can add, which is stack_guard_gap=1, no spaces. And that's a kernel parameter that you would add. Now, adding a kernel parameter is not something we're really going to solve over the air, but it's in grub. So if you were to edit, and you have to do this, of course, as root, but if you were to edit /etc/default/grub, you would add that to it. Now, I don't know if... there we go. Steve has found...
same article, I think.
An article that will tell you how to do all of that.
Okay.
And, of course, as always, you're on your own if you're going to... And then, of course, you got to update Grub and et cetera. So, yeah, back up everything. I have done kernel changes in Grub myself. They are scary as anything. But they work if you're careful, triple check your work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
You put the wrong slash in or miss a minus sign.
Exactly. Or you put a space in before or after the equal sign.
RM space RF minus one.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely you want to be very, 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 very careful doing this. Double, triple, quadruple check before you save that file. And then wipe it out and do it again. You know, just don't save it and then go back in and do it again and double, triple, quadruple check. But it is doable, and theoretically that solves the issue until Java actually fixes it.
Well, I did read an article, too, also, that they are trying, or LibreOffice, the people who develop that, are trying to get away from it.
Right, right, getting away from Java, and this is the reason, because they, you know, Java's behind.
Oh, okay.
All right.
And Java was one of those great ideas where it exists on all platforms, so a company can write a program once, and it runs on Mac, Windows, Linux with no changes.
Right.
It hasn't
worked out that way. All right, we got to move on.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's we definitely love the idea of LibreOffice. I use it myself all the time. It's kind of amazing, but the weakness is Java, and what are you going to do? That's why LibreOffice is trying to forget that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hiya, Carl. How are things down there?
Oh, pretty good. How about with yourself?
Peachy, thanks. What's up?
I can say, how close are you to Punxsutawney?
I'm sorry, say that again?
How close are you to Punxsutawney?
Oh, Punxsutawney. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up on the map.
So not very close.
Apparently not enough, anyway. So what's up, Carl?
Well, I have two problems. Small problems, but I've been living with this for a little bit now. Many times when I click on Google Chrome, Google Chrome comes up with three tabs. One is about blank. The next tab is Google. Now, those two always come up. Once in a while when I click on Google Chrome, a third tab comes up, and it's Evernote Web Clipper. And the tab just doesn't come up. It automatically goes to that tab, and therefore my screen fills up with the home page of Evernote Web Clipper. So I just click out of it. It's no big deal. The second problem is my computer, I have determined, can read my mind, and I want to know how to make it stop doing that. And the reason I know that is because while I was on hold, I clicked on Google Chrome about 30 times in a row, trying to make that third web tab automatically pop up, Evernote Web Clipper, and it never did. So obviously it knew I was trying to make it do it, and just to be spiteful, it wouldn't do it. But it does it whenever I least expect it. I was wondering how I could stop that from happening.
You have to uninstall the Web Clipper software. What happens is Evernote often will do two things. One is if they update the Web Clipper, you see the page.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is if they feel you haven't, if you've been ignoring them, frankly, Carl, Valentine's Day is coming up and it just wants a little love.
I see.
So the way you get rid of the Evernote Web Clipper page coming up is you just uninstall Web Clipper. But obviously you don't want to do that if you use it regularly. And then you just kind of have to live with that. As far as I know, there's no other fix for it. In terms of about blank and Google, if you open up the More menu in the upper right, those three dots, under Settings, if you scroll down, you will see open a specific on Startup is the section name, and it says open a specific page or set of pages. And you should look in there to see if that about blank is in there, and you can then just delete that.
Probably
from
all three
the
of
list.
Those pages are in there.
It might be that all three of those pages are in there. So you just set that to whatever you want. You can add a new page, just use the pages that are currently showing on your screen, and et cetera, et cetera. But it may be that somewhere along the line, you accidentally added that, or extension you added that you then deleted, added itself, and now it comes up as blank or whatever, whatever. The point is, you should be able to control what set of pages open up on Startup by going through Settings, go down to the Settings to the On Startup section, scroll down, and you can open the new tab, you can continue where you left off the last time you closed it, open a specific page or a set of pages. And so any of those things will work. You just have to set it up yourself.
We see a lot of malware will put themselves in that Startup page.
Right.
So you think you've cleaned it, and then you open your browser again, and it reinstalls.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, while you were talking, I did what you said. I went to Google. I clicked on the three dots in the upper right-hand corner. I scrolled down to On Startup, and under Open a Specific Page or Set of Pages, there are only two things. There's a picture of a blank page, in other words, a little icon of a blank page, and also www.google.com, and that's it. So, however Evernote Web Clipper is coming up, it's not because it's there.
Well,
it must be just because I have the software installed, I guess.
Right,
probably. There might
right.
be something on the Evernote clipboard that
right.
is waiting for you to paste into
exactly
a web page.
Exactly right. So you can get rid of that blank page. Again, next to that blank page is another little more symbol. And if you click on that, you will see edit or remove.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can just remove it, and then you won't get that blank page anymore.
Okay. Thanks for the great advice.
Yep.
All right, take care.
All right, have fun. Stay warm.
And the answer to my earlier question is he is 250 miles from Punxsutawney, which is north of Pittsburgh, which I should have remembered because in the movie, the Bill Murray's character came from Pittsburgh to go cover the...
Sure. And he's much closer to...
Allentown.
Yeah, he's close to Allentown.
Harrisburg area, yeah.
All right.
Hershey Park.
Hershey Park, very fine place. Just go to Hershey Park and breathe in. It's amazing. All right, we are the first hour of this show is now history. Want to thank everybody and for your patience while we had a little phone issue, which is now solved. Thanks to Rob Linton. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 59 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Dennis from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
I'd like to get some more information from Steve about this switch from Time Warner to Spectrum. I have the full package, which is TV, phone, and Internet. Steve, did you have the same package or that kind of package?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oops. I'm getting a feedback here, yeah. One of the things that we've seen happen with the way Time Warner worked is there were different channel packages. Spectrum calls it gold. Was it gold, silver, and platinum or something like that? And by default, they sign you up for everything. And so I was able to cut out a package of channels I don't use. The only thing I lost was Smithsonian Channel, so I watch that on my Apple TV now to get the new Mythbusters. You can look through your bill. It's one of the services we offer at our company, and see where they're either double billing you or charging you for things you don't need. One of the tricks that we've seen is that you sign up for a package and you get HBO free for 6 months, and at the end of 6 months, they start charging you. So there's a lot of things like that that can be hidden on the bill. But just looking to see what channel packages you're getting. And deciding if you need all of those channels or not. And if there's only one or two channels in a package, then you can watch them other ways on their website or on Apple TV or Sling or other places like that.
Yeah, I did that. When you talked about this a few weeks ago or so, I looked on my bill and I'm not getting overcharged. When you switched your internet or whatever you did, from Time Warner to Spectrum, did you go down to the office or did you talk to someone by phone?
I actually did it at the office because my DVR died. One of the things I had heard that turned out to be false is I have the 6-channel DVR that you can record 6 things at once. And I'd initially heard that Spectrum didn't offer that. The other thing Spectrum may not offer is the whole house DVR, where you record on one room and watch in a different room. With Spectrum, you just get another DVR for that other room. But the six-channel DVR Spectrum does offer, so I was able to keep that and switch to the Spectrum service and lower my bill.
Yeah, I have both of those things that you're talking about, record six shows at once and watch in the whole house. But so did you have to have a tech come to your house? Did you talk to
somebody
on the phone? How did you accomplish the switch from Time Warner to Spectrum?
They just gave me a new router when I was in the store. So you can call them on the phone and tell them you want to switch, and they will ship you a new Spectrum cable modem. Or you can go to the office and switch and pick one up yourself.
Okay, so the six-show DVR that I have and the modem and all that sort of stuff is different from Spectrum to Time Warner. They have to give you something different. Am I understanding you correctly on that?
Yes, because the Time Warner modem was only capable of doing the 50 megabit max they offered. So you need to get the new modem to be able to do with 100 they offer now, and it's capable of 300 if you want to pay for that. So it's funny that 100 megabit is their slow speed. You can buy 300 if you want.
Nice.
Wow. Okay, that's great. That helped out a lot, Steve. Thank you very much.
Yep, no problem.
Yeah, the broadband is getting faster in Rochester, which is nice to know.
Yep.
Certainly, Greenlight and Spectrum both are offering very fast packages, and we love to see that.
And it looks like Spectrum is offering the whole house DVR service now. That might have been a limitation of Charter, but Spectrum offers. See, that's right. The whole thing that's so confusing. So Charter bought Time Warner. Both of them had kind of bad reputations, and so they called the new company Spectrum. We're a new company, and trust us, we haven't done anything bad in the past because we just started.
Right. Yes, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. I wanted to go back to streaming.
Yeah.
And another one that's fairly decent is PlayStation View.
Yes.
Yeah.
The only caveat there is they only allow you to keep things on the cloud DVR for like 20, 25 or 28 days or something like that. It's 20-some-odd days. Then it gets deleted.
Right.
And that's firm. People have argued with Sony about it for a while, and they're not changing it. So whatever their reason is for that.
They don't want to buy another hard drive.
Yeah, like I said, it's probably server space, but regardless, pretty decent service, very good prices. You could go $75 and get like everything, which is really cheap because if you did it on cable, it would be outrageously expensive, more than $75.
Mm-hmm. Right, that gives you all the premium channels, all the movies,
the sports channels.
Right, and that, like I said, the only caveat is that they only let you hold that stuff on the DVR for like 25 days. So the other thing that's nice, though, is you can do it up to 5 devices in your house. So if you had Rokus in every room or PlayStation 3 or 4 or an iOS device or even a Chromecast.
Right. Right,
because all those devices.
Right, because you can get the app or whatever they want to call it for those things. Exactly.
And yeah. Their prices are really good. Like I said, the only caveat is if you want to hold on to things for a while and say you want to record a show and then watch it in the summer when nothing's on, you're pretty much not going to be able to do that.
And you don't have to have a PlayStation anymore.
Right.
That's what he's saying. You can get the app.
Well, you don't even have to have one to start with.
Right.
Right. You can do it on a Roku.
Right.
You can do it on a Fire Stick.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to have it for dang near everything.
Yep. So I just wanted to put that out there. It's a pretty decent way of going other than that 20-some-odd day limitation. So.
We do tend to see it's the sports packages that add to prices.
Yeah.
And movie packages, yeah.
Yep. And pretty much NFL Network and some of the ESPNs are in everything but their lowest package. Then they get into local sports more as you go higher.
Right.
But you do get, like, NFL Network and at least one ESPN in the lower package.
Nice.
So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, yep. Thanks. Excellent.
The choices are wide-ranging now.
Yeah, they really are. It's very tough at this point to know which one is the best one for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what is it you like? What is it you want to watch? I tell people all the time, what you do is you need to do a diary.
Yeah.
You need to sit down and every day for a month, write down what you watch.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
And I sat there and, literally watched, listed the channels I wanted. And like we were talking before, remember when it first started coming out, there were all these different packages, and Steve was even making the comment, well, if I get this package and that package and this package, because these are the channels I watch, it's more than the cable bill.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And you have to switch between six devices to watch some things on this right. device and some things on the other mm-hmm. device.
But that's why I say you need to do a diary, because I've talked to so many people who said, oh, I got this package and I really love it, except I forgot that I watch X, which isn't in that package. Hmm. Or I forgot that the new season of such and so, because I wasn't watching it over the summer or whatever.
Yeah.
So you want to sit down and not only list your favorite shows, but then keep a diary of what you're actually watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll tell you what you should, what mm-hmm. kind of package you should be looking
and
for.
And you got to do it for a whole TV season. In other words, from September right on through to May.
Or at least a month, because then...
Well, no, because...
Well, it's got to be in the regular season, yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing, though. Some start... Like, some shows start are for the fall, mm-hmm. and then they have their spring set.
Right.
So you got to watch it, because, like, right now, one program I happen to like is Code Black.
Yeah.
They don't start that until this coming month.
Yep.
And yet, say, Outlanders, that's on during the fall.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you got to, like I say, you got to do it for a whole TV season.
Right.
List the programs that you like to watch, because right. they're not all on like they used to be. They take a short break during the holidays, during Christmas, and then come back on. They don't do that.
That's one thing cable still has going for is it does tend to be the easiest way. But like many things, the easiest way is often the most expensive way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you got to do your homework. And that's what I did, like I say, for quite a while, making that list and then, going through and thinking about it because, and then checking out all the different packages.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly changing. Matter of fact, Amazon, I believe, just upped their package because they were trying to be competitive with Sling. I haven't looked into that.
Yeah.
And now YouTube is throwing up the bar.
YouTube TV.
Yeah, and they're, they're adding more, and it's going back and forth because of the internet being mm-hmm. faster, and then, no caps in that, and cutting out the cable company.
Now, I will say this, the PlayStation View has a channel called Hiya, the best in Asian action.
Nice. That's what you used to use your Roku for.
That's exactly mm-hmm. right.
Now we've got the El Rey network on cable that has a lot of the same stuff.
Has a lot of that stuff, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now you have to do your research.
And I'm mm-hmm. mad at CBS.
Please.
So in addition to all of these package deals we're getting, some of the networks, CBS, has their own streaming service completely separate from everybody.
Well,
and that's the only place you can legally watch Star Trek Discovery.
So does Discovery. The Discovery Channel, I believe, is separate.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be
included
on...
in some packages, but maybe the Discovery extras are only right. on their state. So a lot of times you still have to subscribe to some internet-only service in order to watch something, which is very frustrating. I'd said someone asked me last week, what happened to Star Trek Discovery? I saw an episode on TV, and then it never came back again. Well, yeah, that one episode was to trick you into liking it, so you would then buy the $7 a month all access.
Yeah, right.
And what a lot of the networks do, most of the other networks, you can watch two or three episodes for free on the web, but with CBS All Access, no. You have to pay for everything. At least the other networks, you can watch the two or three latest ones and some of the old ones, and the ones in the middle you might have to pay for.
Right. But, and if you don't get the Discovery Channel, you don't get MythBusters.
They're not on Discovery anymore. They're on Science, aren't they?
No, so this is right here, Discovery.
Okay, that's Australia.
Oh, that's Australia. Yeah. You're right. You're right. It is. You're right.
Because I get the Discovery Channel. I don't get the Science Channel on the package I have now. And they just rearranged the channel. So I used to not get Comedy Channel. So I'd watch South Park and and Trevor Noah on the internet, but now they rearranged the channels, and Comedy Channel is now included in the lower package.
Right, right, right.
So that's the one big thing you have to do is start remembering networks, not channel numbers.
Right.
This show is on this network, and this network is on this service.
Right, 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 right. Oh, yeah, the Science Channel is in here, so that's all right then.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's it gets confusing. We used to.
Is he coming or gone?
Are we talking to Mark, or did we already talk to Mark?
No, we already talked to him.
We finished Mark.
Yeah, we finished Mark. Yeah, that's who was talking about PlayStation View.
That's right, yeah.
It used to be we'd remember, you know, oh, my show comes on Channel 8 at 9 o'clock. Now you have to remember what actual station that is and where you can get it. Now, if you've got something like Google YouTube TV, then you can just set a VCR and keep it for 9 months.
And we kind of got used to that with DVRs because you watched the show whenever you got to it. So you didn't have to watch Channel 8 at 9 o'clock on Friday. You watch the show. So now, in addition to the show, you have to know the network it's on.
Yeah.
Right.
And so that's why all the networks put that little bug down in the bottom corner to remind you what network you're watching.
Right.
And that could be annoying as all get out at times.
Yeah. The problem, of course, is that nothing of this is going to be perfect. And we are in very, very, very early days with this stuff. One of the things that I like.
It's just starting to learn how to walk or crawl.
Right. One of the things that I like about these things is you can have multiple accounts on some of them, like YouTube TV. You have 6 accounts. So I can watch one thing and record my shows. My wife can watch something entirely else and record her shows. My daughter can watch something else and record her shows.
Mm-hmm.
And that still gives us 3 streams to, I don't know, charge our friends for? No.
So Amazon.
No. No, that was a joke.
So Amazon split out Amazon Video for $8.99 a month. It's still part of Amazon Prime, which is $100 a year. But if you just want the video service and don't care about the shipping. But like a lot of us, I signed up for Amazon Shipping, the Amazon Prime to get the 2-day free shipping. And, oh, there's video there, too. Oh, there's music there.
Their prices are going up now for the Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Well, I just renewed in January, so.
You're good for a year?
Good. Yeah, I signed up at Christmas a couple years ago to get the free shipping for Christmas, and then just ended up keeping it.
Right. Speaking of services, Net, and one of them that folks have to be watching out for is the Netflix. Because right now there's a scam out there folks are getting calls or saying, the Netflix lost your information about your account and that they need to regather all your information.
Yeah,
we're just coming up on it right now.
Yeah. So it's unfortunate, but you can't believe any message that pops up on screen. You can't believe an email that comes saying you need to do something or there's a problem somewhere because the bad guys have taken over.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, it's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And, oh, boy. Microsoft is just getting better and better and better. In the olden days, Microsoft's support policy for Windows and Office was simple. Each release had 5 years of mainstream support, during which it received security updates, feature improvements, and stability fixes. That was followed by 5 more years of extended support, during which time it received security updates only, unless you paid, and then you got full updates. With Windows 10 and Windows as a service, that policy got all shaken up. After a period of refining the details, Microsoft settled on the current scheme. This is different and new. Mainstream Windows Office and Windows Server users are on the semi-annual channel, or SAC. They get 2 major service updates each year, with each version named with a 2-digit year and a 2-digit month. The current version is 1709 because it was built in September of 2017. Its successor will be built in March of 2018, hence the name 1803. Each of these releases receives 18 months of security updates, and each Office SAC release is only supported on the supported Windows SAC releases. For organizations that can't or won't use the SAC, there's also a long-term servicing channel, or LTSC. Windows Office and Windows Server LTSC releases are made every 3 years and receive the traditional 5-year mainstream plus 5-year extended support policy. And yes, we Ubuntu users find this very familiar. It's exactly the scheme we've been running under for years, decades, except our new releases come out in April and October. So, for example, I'm running Xubuntu 16.04 LTS long-term support. The Office LTSC and Windows Server LTSC releases are perpetually licensed, whatever that means. Windows 10 LTSC releases are exclusively available to customers with volume licensing subscriptions. Windows 10 SAC releases are available to both subscribers and as perpetually licensed box products. On Thursday, Microsoft announced some modifications to their Baroque licensing scheme. The last three Windows SAC releases, versions 1709, 1703, and 1607, are being given an extra 6 months of support. Giving these releases a few extra months of support, Microsoft assures us, will help smooth the transition for companies that simply aren't ready, like all of them. The next LTSC releases of Office and Windows 10 will be in the second half of this year, named Office 2019 and Windows 10 Enterprise LTSC 2018, respectively. Office 2019 will require Windows 10 SAC, Windows 10 LTSC 2018, or the next Windows Server LTSC release. They will solely be available as click-to-run installation packages. The traditional MSI installer will not be offered. Office 2019 won't, however, offer the usual 5+5 support policy. Instead, its support lifecycle is being tied to Office 2016. After 5 years of mainstream support, it will receive only 2 years of extended support, with both Office 2016 and Office 2019 extended support ending on October 14th, 2025. Our more cynical listeners, you know who you are, might wonder if this signals the impending death of the LTSC releases entirely, though Microsoft insists that it has no plans to drop perpetual Office licenses. Notice they don't mention Windows licenses, or at least move away from the 5+5 life cycle. Of course, once Windows as a service is available, all bets are off. Confused yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Now, was that a Baroque licensing scheme or a Baroque?
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of both when you get right down to it.
A little bit of this, a little
bit
of that.
It might be Rococo rather than Baroque. It's certainly...
More reasons to go to a Chromebook.
Well, you know, or Linux or a Mac or just anything that isn't running Windows. Now,
We still have fights, arguments with people. You don't need to buy Microsoft Office.
Right.
Well, I'm used to it. But you don't need, you can learn something new. You're not dumb. You can learn something new.
LibreOffice does everything most people need to do.
Well, even on the Mac, it comes with Apple's Office Suite.
Right.
Well, I had another person say, well, yeah, I got the Chromebook. So what antivirus and that do I need on there? You don't. What about spyware and malware? Don't need it.
You need it.
Hello. Well, what about paying for an operating system? I says, it'll do it in the background. Updates automatically. What?
An update waiting right now.
Well, how are they making any money on it? Just the sheer use. Yeah, they're Google.
They're Google, yeah.
The
things in the background, when the earlier caller said my computer is reading my mind, I can be at work and I'll do some research something. I come home and I look up something and I see an ad for the thing I searched for at work.
Yeah, because you're using the same login.
Yeah.
That's why, yeah.
Yeah. And but, you know, as we've talked about before, it, you know, is such a great device, saves you so much time and effort, and can cover your butt in backing up stuff. Because if you're using Google Docs and everything else, it's up there. It's saved.
Yep. This last week, I got the latest update for Windows on my laptop, and it just bricked it. It just bricked it.
Mm-hmm.
That Intel update,
yeah.
It just screwed up my machine so... very badly, and I was tired of it and I'm done with it. So I put Linux on it. It's faster. It's cleaner. It runs great. I don't have trouble getting online at RIT. I don't have trouble with any of the stuff that started after that Intel update. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it bricked the machine entirely. I am much, 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 much happier having put Linux on that machine than I ever was with Windows on it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, hey.
I tried for 2 years.
Like I've said, they're their own worst enemy. Because, yeah. You know, they try to do stuff, and either, one, they screw it up big time, or if it doesn't take off well, they dump it.
Well, and they'll
so either way, you're hosed.
They'll screw it up for a year, you know, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, then they get it right, or then they kill it. That's the problem.
Right, but in this particular case, it's the entire operating system. I was not willing to wait another 2 or 3 years for them to get it right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to keep reinstalling it every 6 months just so they can kill it again.
Well, did you try Windows S?
That's done. Supposed to be... you know what the S stands for.
Well, and that's
superior. Superior.
And that's where, again, them taking over versus the Chromebooks in school, they're a little too late to the race. Because, like I say, you know, I hope most school systems in that don't buy in to their, you know...
Well, it's going to be... the other way around. Microsoft is going to buy its way into those schools.
Yeah, but then you when know, they talk them to, into, they got to have their own server.
Well, but Microsoft can say, we'll give you this one. Right? We'll give you this server. We'll give you these books, these Windows S machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then you buy the next version. But, I, you know, and so far Google is not just giving stuff away. But then, you know, I don't know. It...
Yeah,
you know
then,
what I've seen of the Google management software. It's so easy to use, and it's so convenient, and it's so complete.
But the biggest thing, like I say, and you can sum it up in very short terms. I don't have to be an administrator as far as keeping the machines clean.
Right.
Chromebooks just won't get viruses, spyware, and malware. That eliminates half of an IT team's effort and working with systems. Because what's the biggest thing? Oh, my machine's infected. Or this is infected. Chromebooks don't.
That's exactly right.
You can cut staff just in that.
It's so slow. I don't know what's wrong. All right. There's 3,000 malware programs running.
Yeah.
Right. And so I agree with you. To me, it's much easier to support a Chromebook where basically... it doesn't turn on, you need to buy a new one.
No.
Other than that, it works every day.
Yeah. Well, see, the problem there is the IT department head, his power and value comes from the number of underlings he has.
That's absolutely
true.
You've
just cut out the number of underlings he's got to hire.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, but with administrative costs being cut all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean... they're going to be looking for ways to cut it. And if they can get into something that, you know, it's going to save them a lot of time and effort, and especially with these kids, you know, giving them a device, one, they put those Otter cases and that on them, they can drop them and everything else. Oh, if they're done with it for the year, they just do a reset on it, and boom, it's ready for the next school year.
Right. And in terms of that, the schools are buying the low-end Chromebooks, because A, they save money, and B, they don't run the Android apps, and they don't want them to run the Android apps.
Because that's the story you've got later about how many 100,000 fake or malicious apps.
700,000 malicious apps were gone, which is good news. It means they're policing.
Yep,
they're doing their job and cleaning out that junk.
Right, but that's the kind of thing that as a administrator, I want my life to be as easy as possible.
Speaking of the Chromebooks and that's one thing I found out today. I was playing around with it again. I figured, I'll give it a shot. And I went back to the beta version and did another update. It said, ask me to restart. Okay. And then I went back into the settings and magically, it says, do you want to use the Play Store? I go, heck yeah. Boom. Now I can run the Android apps and that on my
It's so weird. I have the Android Play Store. on my Chromebook, but I don't think it works. I don't think it does anything.
Doesn't let you buy anything yet?
Well, did you go into the settings and turn it on?
Well, it's not there. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, then you're in the beta version?
Yeah.
It's just teasing.
No, no, I'm not.
You got to go into the I had to go into the beta version. So right. I had to do an update, and then, wham. They're there. They work great. So,
right. No, and I get that. I'm just surprised that for some reason I've got the Play Store.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe the one of the updates put it there.
Maybe.
But yet, you know, for that model of Chromebook.
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
It's got to be in the settings.
Right, and it's not.
It shows a little Android apps thing that you got to turn it on, and it says you got to agree to it and all that.
Yep. No, I don't have any of that.
No.
So,
a new Chromebook.
It is time for a new Chromebook. I just can't.
One toy at a time.
Oh, no.
One toy at a time.
This sign that I found from a local hobby shop, joking, for only $4.95 more, we will print you a receipt for the amount you told your wife you spent.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Oh, honey, my 3D printer was only $99 before I added on
everything else.
$300 worth of filaments. Add-ons. And let's not even talk about the filament.
Well, you won't go there?
Let's not go to the filament. That's not a good idea.
When they sell it by the kilo, you know it's bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but his car is getting through the snow pretty good right now because of all the extra weight of the filaments in the back seat.
Yeah. I've got a lot of filament and no printer yet. But that'll change.
It's coming.
The problem is, I did a Kickstarter for the Kodama Obsidian, and too many people don't understand how Kickstarter works. It's not a store.
Right.
You know, you're backing the creation of a product. Creation takes time. Some of them don't make it to market.
Yep.
Oh, well, that's you got to understand that before you
jump into it.
Jump into a Kickstarter. It's not a store. You're not buying something.
Yeah, it's not being delivered next week.
Right. You're backing the possible creation of something. It's that easy. It should be here the end of March-ish. And I'm not upset if it's not here yet. I'm not bothered that it's not here yet because I knew what it was.
We will know because it'll probably be a Saturday that Nick doesn't show up for the show. We give a call.
That's exactly right.
And he's been up all night playing.
Ooh, did you get the auto leveling sensor?
Yes.
I think we need one of those.
You need
one of those. On our 3D printer.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you
we
do.
Can get, yeah, we level one side, and then you go to the other side, and it's not level. How does that happen?
Exactly. Well, the auto leveling is a really interesting thing. What it does is it levels. It's a software thing that levels the print to whatever the bed is set to. Now, obviously, if the bed is set like this, it's not going to level it.
Yeah.
But if you're off by, a millimeter here, a millimeter there, a couple millimeters one way or the other, it'll compensate for it. But yeah, it's a pretty cool toy, and I can't wait. It's going to be wonderful. Did you just start music?
No.
Okay. Yes, you did start music.
No, that was at least 5 seconds.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
There was a delay. You asked me. I said, no, I was just getting ready. You anticipated
He's going to. He didn't just.
Well, I saw you do something and then just stare, and I thought, am I not hearing the music because I'm not hearing it, or what happened to it? That was my thing. Exactly. We're going to take a quick break while these guys teach me how to tell time. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites is member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Like I said, it's been a very dense news week. Lots and lots and lots of stories. A lot of them are on, of course, AskNick.com. But I got to talk about this one. Samsung is full steam ahead on making a foldable Galaxy phone. Although it isn't clear if that means the screen itself could fold. There are many other ways to make a phone foldable. We now know that the foldable displays are a major part of Samsung's mobile strategy. The company said in its earnings report on Wednesday, which is where you get all the real news. Listen, watch the earnings reports. That's where they tell the investors what's actually going to happen next year. And they don't lie to the investors. The company said in its earnings report on Wednesday that it's developing foldable displays, one of the components that can be used in a phone that folds up. As for the mobile business, Samsung will continue its, this is a quote, as for the mobile business, Samsung will continue its efforts to differentiate its smartphones by adopting cutting-edge technologies such as foldable OLED displays. That was the third time Samsung mentioned foldable OLED displays in its earnings call. This is clearly an area of interest for Samsung and a way that it plans to pull ahead of Apple and other phone makers. Foldable displays seem to differ from flexible displays, which Samsung already uses in phones with curved screens like the Galaxy S8 and Note 8. Flexible displays can curve and bend, but they currently don't fold. You can't, you know, fold them and crease them in the middle.
And have them remain intact.
Well, yes, you can, in fact. You're right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. You can, in fact, fold them and put them in your pocket.
We've had a couple people bring in folded phones.
You can't unfold them.
Yeah.
What Samsung is describing now is new technology, a foldable and unfoldable display. It's a foldable phone that seems, in a foldable phone, seems like a most logical fit. Foldable phones are a hot topic in the phone world with years of development and what-if concept pieces popping up from time to time. Foldable phones could increase a device's usable screen space while keeping its physical footprint small and shake up a design that's frankly grown a little stale. Samsung wouldn't be the first to make a foldable phone. If it succeeds, you can thank ZTE, a Chinese company that released the Exxon M late last year. That device actually had two screens that fold open on a hinge, like a mini tablet or book. With this feature, it can do unique things like combine the two screens into one big display, albeit with a black stripe up the middle, or use them separately to multitask. Samsung has submitted a patent for a similar phone design that opens and folds, but with no hinge in the middle. It also applied for a different patent where the screen can fold in on itself. The second design would be, that's the one that has no hinge. The second design would support the foldable OLED panel that Samsung says it's working on. So is a foldable phone in your future? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
They were apparently showing off the almost-finished Galaxy 10 phone in secret CES meetings.
Yep.
But people have gotten to the patent filings. So it's got a 7.3-inch screen, which is a huge screen. But if you can fold it in half, it doesn't take up that much pocket space.
Yep.
I remember one of the first ones I saw in sci-fi was on Andromeda ages ago. But they're also using it in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now, where you have like a little cylinder, and you just pull the screen out of the cylinder like a parchment roll.
One of the TV shows that did that many, many decades before any of the others. And yeah, it's a little cylinder. You pull it out and you can see what's there and you fold it back up. I really like the reboot of the one where they're going to destroy Mars, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah, Total Recall.
Total Recall. Thank you very much. Which, of course, ironically, I couldn't remember
Mars.
The name of.
Yeah. We can remember it for you wholesale.
Exactly. Philip K. Dick. Who doesn't love him? He's
apparently
that,
he didn't.
That particular show, in the reboot, all he had to do was touch a window, and it would become the screen for his phone, which I really liked. I mean, that was just very cool.
Everything is the screen.
It's very cool. But the ability to have a giant screen, everybody wants the biggest screen they can get on their phone, but you don't want to be lugging around a 10-inch. That's like the people who use a tablet for a phone. I mean, you can do that now with the right software.
Hello?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, no. But if you can have it folded, and then with the right stuff on it, you can keep it folded to look at who the messages are from, or look at your your clock, or you know whatever it is, or to send a text. But then you open it up to watch a video, or do video texting with somebody, or whatever that is, or look at a web page. If I have a phone that's if you were to take your phone the way it is right now and think about this, hold it sideways, and then flip it open so that's all one screen. That's a heck of a screen.
And some of the early candy bar phones were trying that where you flipped it open and there was your keyboard.
Right. Right. But if you can, if I can unfold it, and that's all one screen, that's a lot of real estate. That's a lot of real estate. And that's what people want. They want all the, you know, it's essentially now a phone and a tablet.
John Sculley's Knowledge Navigator from 1987.
Exactly. Amazing stuff. And that's the kind of thing that people want. And that's the kind of thing that everybody's now capable of working toward. I mean, we had the vision long before there was the technology to do it.
We have the assistance now with Siri. It's S-A-N-G. We
can't right.
What was it? Shlomo, Alyosha, and Guillermo.
There you go. But the interesting thing is that now the folks at Google are talking about changing the trigger word and letting you set your own. So you could say, hey, Jeeves, you know, or whatever you wanted to call it. So that's pretty cool.
Folds open and holds.
Folds open and there it is. It's it's Alan Kay's, actually, isn't it? Not John Scully's.
Well,
Alan
Scully showed it off. Maybe the idea originally came from Alan Kay.
Yeah, but remember Kodak had a flex screen.
And that's 30 years ago.
Right.
Their flex technology.
Right. But back in the day, it was very expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And not something that was easy to manufacture.
No.
Now the theory is they're working on, you know, making them as cheap as regular OLEDs. So that's how they can be used in a phone. It's all about mass production. If you can't mass produce it, it has
cheaply,
no point. Right. So cheaply, yeah. So that's the next cool thing that I'm personally looking forward to. You know, the ability to unfold my phone and have a big screen.
But the thing that is, though, and I guess this, since my Nexus 7 there, makes me very leery, especially when they start going, you know, they want to do the technology, and I grant that, and they want to do it cheaply. But the minute you start going to China with their regulations and quality and everything else, you know, I'm going to be very gun shy and jumping right into something
like that. Well, the problem with the Note 7 was the battery folded. The battery was compressed.
Yep.
It was too tight. The case was too tight for the battery. And that stressed the battery and caused it to short. So if they fix that, particularly now, he was talking about this, Steve's been talking for weeks now about the battery that they cut up.
Yeah.
So if you can have a battery that doesn't short out,
then you
win.
Or
you know, you can make whatever you need to make it.
It shorts out and doesn't boil the fluid in it.
Well, right.
One of the key factors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. It doesn't short out catastrophically.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a future thing that we're starting to see because the technology is finally catching up. And that's not a it is a mark. Okay.
Well, and I was listening to one of my rocketry podcasts this week, and they were talking about the electronics. A lot of rockets have electronics to deploy the parachutes,
right?
And you have to get a really good quality battery. So some of the cheap 9-volt batteries, they're only compression fit into the case.
Right.
So when your rocket does a 20G burn, the battery
you're kind of done.
Loses connection and you don't deploy. And then you have what we call in the industry a lawn dart.
A lawn dart.
That comes in
it's
ballistically.
Technical term there, the lawn dart.
Coming in ballistically. So a lot of the guys, you'll have two electronics packages, two separate computers, two separate power supplies, two separate batteries. LiPo batteries are getting to be a little more popular because they survive temperature differences better than alkaline batteries.
Right.
So if you're going to put your rocket up, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 feet, you know, it gets cold up there. And you don't deploy until up there.
Yeah. Right. After it's gone through all the heat and everything else,
So the battery technology is one of those things where you want to be the next internet billionaire. There's going to be battery billionaires. You figure out a better battery, better storage capacity,
higher storage capacity. Yeah, absolutely.
Safer working conditions. If you can figure out how to make one with sand instead of like lithium or or other.
Well, exactly.
Yeah,
or some other type of material that's very thin.
That we have a lot of here, so we don't have to import it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, durability. You know, it's going to be able to last. Right.
And energy density.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because the denser, you know, there was a company that put out a phone many years ago, 10,000 milliamp hours.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 milliamp hours. Now, it was a lousy phone, so the fact that you had a lousy phone for 10,000 hours didn't thrill people at all.
Yeah.
But it was available, so whatever happened to that technology, who knows?
Well, that was the lithium metal is a much better battery, higher energy density. It's also more dangerous. That's why we're using lithium ion and lithium polymer now.
Right.
But if we get a better electrolyte, then we can go back to lithium metal and get the best of both worlds.
All right, that music tells us it's done. We're done for the week. We want to thank everybody who called in. Want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Seriously, you got to call earlier. The show ends now, and calling in a minute ago doesn't, you're not going to get in. But we want to thank everybody who did call in. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week long. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so you're kind of safe. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of... I think we're going to have Pete Boulay next week. That'll be kind of fun. Didn't I? Maybe it's next week. Maybe it's the week after. I'll look that up. But we're done, and we'll see you in 166 hours.